We are continuing in our verse-by-verse study through the book of Joshua, and we come now to Joshua chapter 4, where Israel has just crossed over the Jordan River. We saw that back in Joshua chapter 3. And now, actually, you could say that Joshua chapter 4 begins with the completion of the crossing of the Jordan River. Let's take a look at it, beginning with the first three verses of Joshua chapter 4, starting now at verse 1. And it came to pass, when all the people had completely crossed over the Jordan, that the Lord spoke to Joshua, saying, "Take for yourselves 12 men from the people, one man from every tribe, and command them, saying, Take for yourselves 12 stones from here, out of the midst of the Jordan, from the place where the priest's feet stood firm. You shall carry them over with you and leave them in the lodging place where you lodge tonight." Now, here, verse 1 says, when the people had completely crossed over the Jordan River, indicating that now the entire company of Israel was over the Jordan River and on the western side in the land of Canaan. Now, that is accepting the people of the tribes of Gad, Reuben, and the half-tribe of Manasseh that settled on the eastern side of the Jordan River, that Transjordan area, accepting those people. Their soldiers had come over to help the rest of Israel conquer the land. But as a whole, Israel was now in the land of Canaan. I just want you to think of what that moment was like for them. The people of Israel had waited some 40 years for this moment. That they had come out of Egypt 40 years before, but now they had crossed the final geographical barrier to the land of Canaan. They were in. And as I discussed before in a previous study, you could definitely say that it was 40 years that they had waited for this, but there's a sense in which you could say they had waited 500 years for this moment, because it was about 500 years before this time that the Lord God had promised this land to Abraham in a covenant, the Abrahamic covenant, we call it, and to Abraham's covenant descendants, those who would descend from Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and then the 12 sons of Jacob, or Israel. Now, this group, whose parents had all died in the wilderness, now they had come this far by faith. And they were going to be called to even greater faith in order to possess and live in the promised land. In other words, crossing over the Jordan River in many ways felt like a finish line. Yes, we're finally in, but there's another sense in which when they crossed over the Jordan River, now their work began. Now they had finished the journey and they had to possess what God had given them in the promised land. They had camped on the eastern side of the Jordan River for many months, maybe about 5 months or so, all the way since Numbers chapter 22, verse 1. Now they were on the plains of Jericho, near the city of Jericho. But there wasn't an immediate rush to attack Jericho. They didn't think, oh, we got to get those guys now. No, by God's direction, Israel was going to deal with some important spiritual matters before they began the conquest of Canaan. And that's going to take up the next couple chapters. We're going to see one aspect of the spiritual preparation that God required Israel to do before they were to approach the city of Jericho. The first one has to do just with what we see right here in verse 2. Let me read that to you again. God told Joshua to tell the people of Israel, "Take for yourselves 12 stones from here out of the midst of the Jordan, from the place where the priest's feet stood firm." So each tribe was to send a representative. Actually, Joshua was to select a representative from each tribe. And each one of those 12 men was to take a stone, undoubtedly as big a stone as they could carry. They were to take a stone from the dry riverbed where Israel had crossed over, and specifically near to where the priests stood holding the Ark of the Covenant. Those 12 stones taken from the base of the Jordan River, the riverbed, those were to be used for a memorial set on the shore, on the riverbank of the Jordan River. Now, this is something that we see several times in the Old Testament. The raising of stones as a memorial. Several times in the book of Genesis, 1 Samuel has a mention of it. It's just sort of a reminder, a memorial of something great that God did, some significant experience that God's people had with him. And so this all happened and they stayed there. Verse 3 says, in the lodging place. By the way, that place is later going to be named Gilgal. And we'll talk more about that later. But let's get it here now, starting at verse 4, where it's going to explain more about the purpose of these 12 stones, verses 4 through 7. Let me read. Then Joshua called the 12 men whom he had appointed from the children of Israel, one man from every tribe. And Joshua said to them, cross over before the ark of the Lord your God into the midst of the Jordan, and each one of you take up a stone on his shoulder, according to the number of the tribes of the children of Israel, that this may be a sign among you when your children ask in time to come, saying, what do these stones mean to you? Then you shall answer them that the waters of the Jordan were cut off before the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord when it crossed over the Jordan. The waters of the Jordan were cut off, and these stones shall be a memorial for the children of Israel forever. These 12 men and the 12 stones that they were to pick up from the dry bed of the Jordan River, they were obvious representations of the 12 tribes of Israel. This was a memorial ceremony and the building of a memorial that Joshua wanted all Israel to take part in. That memorial was going to remain, and he wanted it connected to every tribe in Israel. Why? Verse 6 says that this may be a sign. Those stones would be a sign and a memorial for Israel, reminding them of the remarkable miracle of the dry riverbed crossing of the Jordan River. You could say that that crossing of the Jordan River was the final miracle of the Exodus journey. If you want to think of it, it had been miracles throughout. There was a miracle every day for Israel in that Exodus journey. You see, when they left Egypt, God miraculously parted the waters of the Red Sea. Of course, that was a great miracle. But every day there was a miracle of provision. They ate manna every day. We're going to see in the future chapters of the book of Joshua that the manna is going to stop. It had not stopped yet. It would shortly. But the manna is going to stop. Every day, Israel ate this miraculous manna from God, providing for their needs. And then finally, they came in to the land of Canaan through miraculously parted waters. This great last miracle is sort of a way of tying together all the miracles that God had done for Israel over the last 40 years. This was worth remembering. And it would be a sign. It would be a sign, not only because there were stones to remember, but for where those stones came from. Those stones came from the dry riverbed of the Jordan. Nobody could get those stones. Otherwise, nobody could get them unless God did this miracle of cutting off the Jordan so that Israel could cross over on dry ground. Those stones became unique markers of a work that could no longer be seen. You couldn't see the work after the Jordan River came back again, after it started to flow once again. No, those 12 stones set up by the 12 tribes of Israel, or representatives from those tribes, was to be a memorial establishing a lasting testimony, remembering God's work. And I can imagine that those 12 representatives got as big of stones as they could possibly get. There's probably a little bit of a competition among them. Well, look, the representative from the tribe of Gad, he's got a pretty big stone. I want to get an even bigger one. And there they would, carrying them, maybe even with a little bit of help, up to get big stone so that they could make this memorial so that it would be visible. Why? Verse 6 says, so when your children ask in time to come, this memorial that they were to build on the riverbank of the Jordan, it was to look forward to future generations that did not personally experience that miracle of the Jordan crossing. Friends, let me just put it this way. God did not want his work to be forgotten among the generations. We need to impress that down deeply in our souls. This is one reason why we need to be a people of the book, why we need to know our Bibles. God doesn't want his works forgotten. The great things that God did in and through his people for, and sometimes in judgment against his people, these things need to be remembered. God did not want his work forgotten. But may I say that this doesn't end with the record of the Bible. God didn't stop working among his people. There were not events worthy of memorials ended with the Bible ending. No. That's one reason why I love to study history. Why I love to just hear about what God has done, to hear about the greatness of God and often the failures of men and women, but the great things God has done in time past, because these things should not be forgotten among the generations. See, God's people often fail in their trust in God because they forget the great things that he's done. The faith of future generations is often weak because they've never really been told how great God is, how real God is. Friends, we need memorials to the work of God in our life, in our families, in our congregations. Memorials are necessary because God's people often forget what they should remember. I'm sure there's a satanic strategy in this. You know, there's so many things that the devil would just want you to forget. It's almost as like, okay, look, if I can't stop God from doing a great work in your life, then I want you to forget about it as soon as possible. But no, don't forget. Determine in your mind that you're going to set up some memorial, some reminder, so that you can simply remember the great things that God has done. Memorials are necessary because we, as God's people, we often forget what we should remember. Memorials are also necessary because the truth of what God has done, it does not diminish with time. Friends, we have a way of that when things are in the past, we forget about them. They seem less real. They're not now right before us. They're in the land of the past, some distant land that we no longer have contact with. No. No. The truth of what God has done does not diminish with time. Friends, if God were to dramatically and profoundly and miraculously answer a prayer of yours, just do something remarkable in your life today, and you're so blown away by it, you're so impressed, it encourages you, it builds your faith, it makes you have more and more confidence in God's promises and God's words, and it makes you love the Lord more because you see his great care for you, and just the reality that floods into your soul because it's right there in front of you. Let me say, the reality of all that is not less real, in fact, 10 years later. You may have completely forgotten the event, but the truth of what God has done does not diminish with time. That's why memorials are helpful. Memorials are also helpful in teaching the children of believers. Now, friends, this is very important. We need to teach our children. We need to pass on the reality of the great things that God has done. And hopefully, this will stir up in them a desire to see God do great things in their own day. And memorials, may I say, are especially helpful in times of crisis. Times when we can just say, wow, look, I need you to come through, Lord. I need to trust you. I need to be encouraged and strengthened in my faith. And then we look at some reminder of what God has done in the past, and we just say, Lord, you're a great God. You can do it. All right, now, verses 8 and 9 are going to describe the building of this memorial, starting now at verse 8. And the children of Israel did so, just as Joshua commanded, and took up 12 stones from the midst of the Jordan, as the Lord had spoken to Joshua, according to the number of the tribes of the children of Israel, and carried them over with them to the place where they lodged, and laid them down there. Then Joshua set up 12 stones in the midst of the Jordan, in the place where the feet of the priests who bore the Ark of the Covenant stood, and they are there to this day. Now this is very interesting. We see here first in verse 8 that the children of Israel did just what Joshua, working by the command of the Lord, told them to do. They just did exactly what Joshua told them to do. And don't miss that. Friends, this shows us that the people of Israel had received Joshua as their leader, replacing Moses. Directed by the Lord, Joshua commanded Israel to build a memorial, and they did. We shouldn't overlook these things. It's a good thing when God's people accept and respond to godly leadership around them. And Joshua was God's leader. Moses before him, but Moses was gone. Now they said, we're going to follow you. We're going to follow what you tell us to do, Joshua. And this respect that the people of Israel had for God's appointed leaders, that was going to be an important part of their success in conquering Canaan. They could never conquer Canaan if they were like, Joshua, what does he know? Joshua, I don't know if that's a good plan. Joshua, I don't know if that's a good strategy. No, they had to do what Joshua told them to do. And here we see a good pattern being established here. But notice, after they had go and set up the 12 stones that they had taken from the bed of the Jordan River and set it up where they were lodging that night, verse 9 tells us something that we hadn't seen before. It also says, verse 9, then Joshua set up 12 stones in the midst of the Jordan. In addition to the memorial on the western bank of the Jordan, Joshua also set up a memorial on the riverbed of the Jordan, where the priests stood holding the Ark of the Covenant. Okay, let's get another 12 stones, big as we can carry. Let's put them down in the riverbed. Let's just stack them, I don't know, like in a pyramid or some kind of pile or something, something that could be noticed. It's going to rest there unseen, covered over by the waters of the Jordan River. And they could only be seen in drought seasons, when the level of the Jordan was low. You know, the Jordan River is a river that can vary in its flow pretty substantially according to what season of the year it is. And especially when there's a time of drought, the level of the Jordan, even back in those days, could get pretty low. Now, check this out. When the Jordan River would get very low and a time of drought in that culture, at that time, in that society, it was a time of crisis. So in a season when they were facing the crisis of doubt and the Jordan River would get lower and lower, they'd see this pile of stones begin to emerge at the base of the Jordan River. Look how low the Jordan River is. Wait, look at that pile of stones there in the middle. What's that pile of stones all about? And they would remember all over again the great things that God had done for them. And even in a season of crisis, they could remember God had done great things. Friends, we need that, don't we? In our times of stress, in our times of crisis, we need to be able to look at the memorials of what God has done. So actually in here in Joshua chapter 4, there's two memorials set up. There's the one of the stones taken from the river set up at where they were lodging on the western side of the Jordan riverbank. But then there was also a memorial made in the midst of the Jordan River that normally could not be seen. It could only be seen when the level of the river was low, when Israel was in some time of drought crisis. And I like how verse 9 ends. It says, they are there to this day. At the time the book of Joshua was written, those stones in the midst of the Jordan and those stones on the bank of the Jordan. I don't think they were right on the riverbank, but some distance off, it was where the people lodged. But the two stones, those on dry land and those in the river, they were there to the day when Joshua was written. They were an enduring testimony to the faithfulness of God, visible in times of drought, visible all the time, a beautiful testimony. Now we come to verse 10. I'm going to read verses 10 through 14, which is sort of a summary of Israel's crossing of the Jordan River. Here we go, starting at verse 10. So the priests who bore the ark stood in the midst of the Jordan until everything was finished that the Lord had commanded Joshua to speak to the people, according to all that Moses had commanded Joshua. And the people hurried and crossed over. Then it came to pass, when all the people had completely crossed over, that the ark of the Lord and the priests crossed over in the presence of the people. And the men of Reuben, the men of Gad, and half the tribe of Manasseh crossed over armed before the children of Israel, as Moses had spoken to them. About 40,000 people prepared for war crossed over before the Lord for battle to the plains of Jericho. On that day, the Lord exalted Joshua in the sight of all Israel, and they feared him as they had feared Moses all the days of his life. All right, there's a lot to unpack in these verses. First of all, in verse 10, we see that the priests who bore the ark stood in the midst of the Jordan until everything was finished. What a job it would have been to be one of those priests. I don't know if they ever switched out and relieved each other, but there were priests standing with the Ark of the Covenant on their shoulders. Maybe there were four, one on each corner. Maybe there were eight, two on each corner. I don't really know. But there were priests standing with the Ark of the Covenant the entire time it took for all those people to cross. The Ark, as the visible representation of the presence of God, it remained in the river as Israel hurried across the Jordan. Now, why did they hurry? Well, maybe some of them hurried because they were afraid. They wondered, maybe those waters are going to come crashing back. You see, God had cut off the Jordan River many miles, many kilometers up north, at a place near Adam, maybe with an earthquake, maybe with a landslide from an earthquake. We don't really know. But as I said before, there's the historical record, I think in 1927, of an earthquake causing a landslide very near this same place, Adam, that the biblical text mentions, that stopped the flow of the Jordan River for 21 hours. Maybe a similar thing, maybe not. Maybe God just sent an angel down and said, stop. Maybe God sent a group from the angelic corps of engineers to go, who knows? But as the people were crossing, maybe they thought, maybe the waters are going to come back. So maybe that's why they hurried. But I'll give you another reason why they may have hurried. Now, I'd like to think this. I'd like to think that as verse 10 says, the people hurried and crossed over. They hurried because they were excited. They were excited to come into the land that was promised to them and to their ancestors some 500 years before. They were excited to finally finish the journey from Egypt. I haven't done a lot of running in my life, but I ran a long race many years ago. I'm not a runner today. But many years ago, I ran a long race, and it was long. But I'll tell you what, I was very tired, exhausted, depleted towards the end. But when I got close to that finish line, there's something that picked up in my pace. I was excited. I was excited to finish such a long race. And wasn't that like that for Israel crossing the Jordan River? They think, we've spent 40 years in the wilderness, 40 years since we left Egypt. God never intended us to live in the wilderness. That was always temporary. It was 40 years, but it was temporary. Now we're headed to where God always intended that we should be. They're excited. And by the way, I like a comment that Adam Clark, that old Methodist commentator, made about this. He points out that the way that it describes in the text the water rushing back, he said, that's an eyewitness account. That's the kind of thing and the kind of way that an eyewitness of the account would mention. And of course, I believe that this account was written by Joshua, an eyewitness to these events. We also see in these verses, verse 12 tells us, that the men of Reuben, the men of Gad, and half the tribe of Manasseh crossed over armed before the children of Israel. Those tribes, the 2.5 tribes, Reuben, Gad, and half of Manasseh, that were content to settle on the east side of the Jordan, their families stayed, but they sent over their armies to fight on behalf of the rest of the nation. They promised to do this to Moses. They promised to do this to Joshua, and now they're fulfilling their promise. And then verse 14 says, on that day, the Lord exalted Joshua in the sight of all Israel. Now, God promised back in chapter 3 that he would do this for Joshua. Joshua, you obey me, you do what I say, and I'm going to exalt you in the sight of Israel. And God fulfilled his promise to Joshua. God raised Joshua up as a great leader for Israel, even as the Lord had done before for Moses. You could say in a very real sense that Joshua was now the new Moses. Just as Moses led the people of Israel through the Red Sea, now Joshua has led the people of Israel through the Jordan River, but now Joshua is going to lead them not into the wilderness as Moses did. He's going to lead them into the land of Canaan, the land of promise, the land that God had vowed to give the people of Israel. Verse 15, here's the sort of eyewitness aspect that I was telling you about earlier. Check this out and see if this doesn't speak to you, as Adam Clark noted, how this sort of breathes of an eyewitness account here, starting at verse 15. Then the Lord spoke to Joshua, saying, command the priests who bear the Ark of the Testimony to come up from the Jordan. Joshua therefore commanded the priests, saying, come up from the Jordan. And it came to pass, when the priests who bore the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord had come up from the midst of the Jordan, and when the soles of the priests' feet touched the dry land, that the waters of the Jordan returned to their place and overflowed all its banks as before. You know, those priests who carried the Ark of the Covenant, they had a long, difficult day. They entered the waters of the Jordan River first. They stood in the middle throughout the entire crossing. And they only came up out of the riverbed when Joshua commanded them after all Israel had passed through the river. Now, it was a great privilege for them to bear the Ark of the Covenant, no doubt. But it was matched by great responsibility. Do you realize that God always puts the two together? Great privilege goes together with great responsibility. And as soon as those priests came out, what does it say in verse 18? The waters of the Jordan returned to their place and overflowed all its banks as before. As soon as the priests came out of the riverbed, the Jordan resumed its normal flood stage flow. And the manner and the timing with which the Jordan returned to its natural flow showed that this event was supernaturally arranged by God. Look, even if God used natural phenomena, such as an earthquake and a landslide, the timing of it was all supernaturally engineered by God. Now, the Jordan flows again. There's no going back. You're in the promised land. Everybody's excited, but I think they're excited. But may I say that as they saw the waters of the Jordan River flowing again, they were impressed with the seriousness, with the sobriety of the present situation. What do I mean by that? Well, friends, as Alexander McLaren said, I'll just read his quote. Retreat was impossible now. A new page in their history was turned. The desert was as unreachable as Egypt. What was Alexander McLaren saying in that? There's no going back. You are in the promised land, and you got to fight now. The battle is just beginning. That wasn't a finish line. That was a starting point. And now you're in the promised land. There's no retreat back to the wilderness. Now you got to fight and take possession of what God has given you. All right, so what do they do first? Well, I like this. Verse 19 and 20. Now the people came up from the Jordan on the 10th day of the first month, and they camped in Gilgal on the east border of Jericho. And those 12 stones which they took out of the Jordan, Joshua set up in Gilgal. I find it interesting that it says there in verse 19 that this happened on the 10th day of the first month. According to Exodus chapter 12, verses 2 and 3, Israel was to begin their celebration of Passover on that day. That was the day that lambs were selected for sacrifice and were to be kept with the household until the 14th day of the first month. They weren't to be sacrificed until the 14th day, but on the 10th day, they selected the lambs, and they lived with the household for those 4 days. Check this out. Passover celebrated Israel's exit from Egypt, and they entered Canaan on the anniversary of that event, some 40 years later. And they camped at this place, verse 19 says, called Gilgal. Now, Gilgal would become Israel's base of operations for the conquest of Canaan, or at least the early operations. Therefore, it was appropriate that the very first work that they did at Gilgal was to set up a memorial to God's great works. And they set up the memorial. That's what verse 20 describes. Now look, starting at verse 21. Then he spoke, meaning Joshua, then he spoke to the children of Israel, saying, when your children ask their fathers in time to come, saying, what are these stones? Then you shall let your children know, saying, Israel crossed over this Jordan on dry land, for the Lord your God dried up the waters of the Jordan before you until you had crossed over, as the Lord your God did to the Red Sea when he dried up before, as until we had crossed over, that all the peoples of the earth may know the hand of the Lord, that it is mighty, that you may fear the Lord your God forever. I love the scene that is suggested here in verse 21, when a child asks their parent, what are these stones? You see, as future generations of Israelite children saw that curious pile of stones near Gilgal on the western bank of the Jordan River, they would ask their fathers, what did those stones mean? What did they signify? Now, I want to clarify this. The purpose of remembering God's great works in the past is not so that God's people can live in a dreamland of the past, thinking that the best days of our life with God, that those days are all in the past. No. God's great works should be memorialized and remembered to provide a point of faith, so that believers can trust God for greater and greater works in the future. And that trust is not a blind trust. It's based on what has been seen, what's been experienced, what's been memorialized of God's past power and faithfulness. Friends, isn't it a strange occurrence that we tend to remember our pains more than our joys? We remember our losses more than our victories. It's true, great athletes will often think more about the championships that they lost more than the ones that they won. Now, this is why it's good for us to make deliberate memorials for the great things that God has done. Again, not to live in a dreamland of the past, but to take the principles of what God did in the past and to use them to build our faith right now for the present day. That's why it says there in verse 22, then you shall let your children know. You see, the memorial had an important purpose for Israel and for their children, giving them a point of contact with God's work in the past. they would understand that God's work did not begin with them, and it did not begin in their time. You know, this is true in the long term. I think of the great things that God has done in and through his word, the great works that are recorded in here that we can use to encourage and strengthen our faith. I think of all the things that God has done throughout church history, the mighty men and women that he's raised up, the great works that he's established. I think even just within our own generation. You know, not long ago, I think it was last year, a movie came out. Again, I don't know when you're going to be seeing this or hearing this, but just in the year 2023, a movie came out, The Jesus Revolution. And it was a story of a man named Greg Laurie. By the way, the man who led me to Christ, the man who was preaching when I was born again and put my faith in Christ and was born again by God's Spirit. I got a lot of respect for Greg Laurie and the work that God's done through him. But this movie, The Jesus Revolution, was Greg Laurie's story, and it contained a lot of what God had done in through what was called the Jesus Movement in the late 1960s and early 1970s. Mainly, the movie was concerned with what God was doing in Southern California, but the Jesus Movement extended far beyond that. What I noticed was that as young people saw that film, as they saw that movie, they got excited for what God might do today. It had exactly the effect that God wanted this memorial in Joshua chapter 4 to have upon the people of Israel. Let's look at what God has done in the past. Let's tell the story. Let's remember it. And it gets people excited, legitimately so. Not a false excitement, not just a foam and fury, but no, an excitement that's legitimate for what God may do today. Friends, we cannot lose these lessons of the present day. We've got to find a way to memorialize them so that God may know, so that not just our children, but look at this in verse 24, that all the peoples of the earth may know the hand of the Lord. You see, that memorial that they set up also had a purpose beyond Israel. It was so that all the peoples of the earth would know that there was a God in heaven who could work miracles, a God they should seek with all their heart. Let me read you a quote from that old Puritan commentator, John Trapp. He said this: "This is an ancient and commendable practice. By lasting monuments to propagate and perpetuate the memory of special mercies and signal deliverances, to set up some marks and mementos upon them, that they grow not stale or moth-eaten." Friends, when I saw the effect that great movie, The Jesus Revolution, if you haven't seen it, I recommend it to you. When I see the effect that it had on people who really had no knowledge of what people called the Jesus Movement and what God did in that marvelous period in the late 1960s, early 1970s, when I saw the effect it had on them, it reminded me all over again of the truth and the need for what God says here in Joshua chapter 4. Let's not let these great works of God grow stale or moth-eaten. Let's find ways to memorialize them. Now, before we leave the chapter, let's consider a few ways that Joshua chapter 4 points to Jesus Christ. I don't think I'm exhausting this, folks. So if you've got other ideas or suggestions, maybe you see some ways that this text points to Jesus that we should think about, well, let us know. But let me just point out a few ways right here. Number one, as Joshua chose 12 men to make God's work be remembered, so Jesus chose 12 men as his disciples. Did you see that correlation? Joshua chose 12, Jesus chose 12. And we're reminding ourselves all through the book of Joshua that the name Joshua and the name Jesus are the same name. One comes from the Hebrew, one comes from the Greek, and of course, in our English language, we've anglicized both of them, but they are the same name. Joshua is Jesus, Jesus is Joshua, so it's fitting. Joshua chose 12 men to make God's work be remembered. Jesus chose 12 men as his disciples. Number two, as Joshua led Israel into Canaan, So Jesus leads his people into the land of God's promise and rest. That's a theme we're coming back to again and again because it's spelled out so beautifully in Hebrews chapter 4. But it's an important one, but not one to be overlooked. Then number 3, Joshua found it important to set up these memorial stones. And he had 12. Friends, Jesus also had a notable memorial stone. Israel was commanded to set up these memorial stones at the Jordan River. But the stone that was rolled away from the tomb of Jesus was an even greater testimony to the power and faithfulness of God. You want a memorial stone? Look at that stone that was rolled away from the entrance of the tomb of Jesus. I say it without reservation. The resurrection of Jesus Christ was an even greater miracle than the crossing of the Jordan River. Well, let that encourage and cheer your heart. You want a memorial stone to look back to? You look back to that stone that was rolled away from the entrance to the tomb of Jesus. The resurrection of Jesus is the greatest miracle to memorialize that we can think of. Let's thank the Lord for it. Lord, thank you that our Joshua, Jesus Christ, leads his people into the land of God's promises. And that's where we want to live, in your land of promise and rest. Lord, give us the faith and give us the wisdom to set up memorials that will remind us, will remind our children, and will remind the whole world of the great things that you have done. Lord, use movies like the Jesus Revolution towards this end and many other movies, books, writings, videos, whatever it would be. But Lord, let not your great works be forgotten. Let us remember them and memorialize them. And we pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.